is your Peace and Justice radio station. You can catch us on the World Wide Web at www.wbai.org or tell a friend to tune in to 99.5 FM in the metropolitan New York area.
This is Joy Williams, election supervisor for WBAI. Your chance to participate in WBAI's first election is fast approaching. If you have contributed $25 within the past year and or volunteered 3 hours or more, then you are eligible to vote. You can verify your membership status beginning November 10th between the hours of 11 a.m. and 4 p.m. by calling Evelyn in membership at 212-209-2845. That number again is 212-209-2845. Remember, you must be a member of the station by November 21st in order to vote in the upcoming election.
We are WBAI. Our mission is to be the tri-state area's premier source of alternative news and information. We need your help. For 3 days, November the 24th through the 26th, 7 a.m. to 11 p.m., we're going into a full-court press with a 48-hour drive. Mark your calendar, pass the word, 48 hours, November the 24th, 25th, and 26th. From Mike Levine to Malcolm X, from food as medicine to biological warfare, from peace and justice to culture wars, our greatest hits. The mission is not impossible, and we will not self-destruct. Stay tuned to 99.5 FM, commercial-free WBAI in New York City.
You are listening to Ecologic coming up, and you are tuned to WBAI in New York. This is Ecologic, Our Common Fate. Today, we will be looking at the Kucinich campaign for president. We will be exploring what may be considered information that is not being covered by the mainstream media and seeing if advocates and activists have something to say about what's happening in the Kucinich campaign. And in our second half of the show, we will be discussing uranium weaponry. There has been a recent conference in Europe, in Hamburg, on the uranium weaponry, and we will be speaking to activists concerning this intense human rights and justice issue around the world. Stay tuned. We are going to this moment. Sounds of Peace, Tibetan Flutist Nawang Kechog. Thank you for being tuned to WBAI in New York. Thank you. WBAI in New York. My name is David Occhiuto. We have Susan Clark on the line with us. Susan, are you there?
I'm here. Good to hear your voice, David.
Yes, how are you doing?
Great.
Okay, Susan Clark is an environmental health advocate and environmental health scientist. Susan's work is founded on the principle that by making science accessible, communities and individuals can become empowered to defend themselves successfully against chemical, nuclear, and electromagnetic pollution. Her work helps people to be educated not only on science and technical facts, but on legal strategies designed to reclaim democracy and civic culture. Right now, Susan has decided that the Denis Kucinich campaign is something of immense importance to her values and her approach to health advocacy, public health policy. So, Susan, we'd like to speak with you today on the Denis Kucinich campaign.
Thanks so much for having me back.
Okay, so why don't you describe to us a little bit about how you decided that, you know, you have been working in the field of being a independent advocate and scientist on health issues. What made you decide to work to help with the Denis Kucinich campaign?
Well, really, two big reasons. I had done some lobbying on the Hill in the mid-1990s, and when Republicans took over Congress in November 94, and within a few years thereafter, it became almost impossible for me to get anything done, as I had been before that, because the power structure was so difficult to pierce through. There were no bills that were any good that were coming up. There was, in a sense, nothing to lobby for. And I think that we need a structure in place, both at, especially at the executive level, as well as in Congress, that will allow the people to have a voice. And the second big reason, of course, is that Denis Kucinich is the best presidential candidate that has ever come along.
Well, many people who follow progressive politics have been quite disillusioned with the Democratic Party and the Democratic Party leadership, the DLC, the Democratic Leadership Council, I think it's referred to, and their kind of monopolization of who becomes their candidate and what their candidate represents in the ruling circles. Many people refer to as that we have one political party, the Republican and Democratic wings of one party. How do you feel, how do you try to communicate to people that maybe Kucinich represents something that is not so steeped in this this kind of framework that people just assume is the nature of the Democratic Party?
Congressman Kucinich himself says that this is an opportunity to bring back all of these splintered off parties, the Green Party and Natural Law Party, even perhaps the Libertarian Party, that have splintered off for good reason. They weren't being represented by the Democratic Party. And now they can come back and see that their values do have representation.
And do you feel that what can we look to? I know his work with certain legislation is very, very progressive in terms of the peace initiatives he's brought about, but also you have discovered his environmental initiatives are very strong. Maybe you can refer to some of his work that we can look to as substantive, as to say that this could be something different that is arising within the Democratic campaign.
I think we need to keep in mind first that environment is best and most powerfully, most effectively protected when we are at the same time protecting health by that means. Because we human beings are not separate from the environment. We're all biological entities, right? So that's why I do environmental health science. And what I find in Denis Kucinich's policies, his many bills that he's sponsored or co-sponsored and supported, voted for, his, the many letters that he's written, is that he's supporting environment and health. That is all of biology. That is life. at base. That's what it's about. It's life over money.
Can you indicate some of the specifics on what he's done with environmental issues?
Sure. For example, I don't know even where to begin, but recently there was a delegation from Bhopal, India, which, as you know, these people have continued to suffer. There are health problems. Their kids are born sick. And there is now a trial going on, finally, in India. One of the many things that Dennis did to help these people was to bring them here and to actually get them a hearing before Congress. Imagine that. He also sent a letter to Dow Chemical, which had bought Union Carbide, which had created the Bhopal disaster way back in 86. And he asked in this letter that a Union Carbide representative be present at the ongoing trial in India. He also asked that that Dow meet the demands of survivors and clean up the factory site and the groundwater, which are ongoingly polluted. Additionally, he filed an amicus brief in the case that was filed in the U.S. and just has really helped these people. He's helped communities all over the world, in Ghana and other communities in India, to protect themselves against polluting plants from the United States that would have come in and destroyed their community, and elsewhere in the world.
And with this work of this global concern that Kucinich seems to be able to communicate to people, going back to India itself, there are other communities, is that right, that may be exposed to various forms of polluting industries that he's expressed concern for, is that correct?
Yes, he's actually sponsored a bill that requires openness when a polluting company wants to set up, let's say, a plant or factory in a community abroad, so that U.S. taxpayers, if they're investing, perhaps unwillingly and unknowingly, in that endeavor, actually can get to see what that plant might do, so they can make a choice about whether to allow their taxpayer money to be put toward such devastating ends.
So, in other words, his work is substantive. His legislative initiatives and his work with government structure, government process, is indicative, can it be said, indicative of a far-reaching difference from what we're used to in terms of the ruling circles in Washington?
You're making me smile, because this is so different as to be astonishing. Mm-hmm. I'm just astonished, and that's why I'm supporting Dennis Kucinich wholeheartedly.
Now, let's quickly refer to the World Trade Organization and NAFTA. These trade arenas, many people feel that it appears that we've lost control of our sovereignty, and that the best we can do is simply to amend and ameliorate these agreements so that environmental and labor issues are considered. But what is Kucinich's approach to these trade arenas?
Well, obviously, it's not just a matter of national sovereignty that's lost, and maybe that's a kind of heady thing for some people. What it means on the ground level is that we're bleeding jobs abroad, not just manufacturing jobs. Manufacturing is almost gone in this country, but we're bleeding also now intellectual jobs, other kinds of jobs, so that academics are ending up practically homeless at times. They lose their funding and they're on the street. This is, it's been called a race to the bottom, and that means an acceleration to the bottom. That's why you have to, from a medical perspective, you stop the bleeding. You don't just say, oh, well, we'll just let a little trickle of blood here. You have to stop the bleeding first and then correct the problem. Now, what Dennis would do is establish not just some compromised form of NAFTA or WTO. He would halt these and establish what we used to have, which is bilateral trade with other countries. That honors the other countries' environmental and labor and other laws. It honors ours as well. That means that we protect our environment, we protect workers, we protect health, we protect, you know, our financial assets as well.
But let me get this straight. Is this actually, many people don't realize that these trade agreements are simply contracts, and we can basically close down and cancel these contracts. And Kucinich is articulating this very thing. He's not saying let's make them a little better. He's saying shut it down and engage bilateral trade where there's mutual empowerment, mutual sovereignty to stop this horrific race to the bottom. Is this, I mean, people, I think some people aren't understanding what he's getting at when he speaks about this.
Look, there's no doubt that NAFTA and WTO and GATT and so on are very, very big deals. There's a lot of power behind them. But on the other hand, NAFTA is very recent. You know, Bill Clinton put this into place, perhaps well-meaningly, intending to create with it, at least initially, a better economy. But look at what it has done in the long run, over these, well, not even long run, but just these few years. So this is a young act, if you will, and it can be repealed at this point. It might not be so easy to do that 10 years down the road. Now's the time to do it.
And he is the only candidate, the only major candidate.
He's the only candidate, right.
That is articulating this actual repeal, shutdown, cancel these trade agreements.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. By the way, I mean, he also has the best voting record on both environment and labor. You know, he's the only candidate who doesn't take PAC money. That means that, you know, when people give money to this campaign, it's going directly to the people's interests. It's not getting washed away in the flood of corporate contributions.
Yes. Now, we also have on the line Yumi Kikuchi from Japan. Yumi is a writer, environmentalist, and peace activist, the founder of the Global Peace Campaign. Yumi has been active in the effort to internationalize the campaign for U.S. presidency. That is, if the U.S. president can rule the world, so to speak, then other countries should have the right to weigh in on the decision of who gets to be president of the United States. And Yumi is spearheading this effort in Japan to internationalize the campaign for U.S. presidency. Yumi, are you with us?
Yes, I'm here.
Hi, Yumi. How are you doing?
Hi, I just woke up.
I just woke up. I guess
one,
it's
1:17.
Oh, boy. I'm sorry to make your sleep a little disturbed, but we love hearing from you. Can you give us a little indication of how you felt, how you decided that Japan needs to be following this race for the U.S. president?
Yes. After watching what the George Bush administration has done to the world after September 11th, I started feeling, oh my God, if he's going to decide who's the terrorist, who's going to be attacked, and who's going to be killed, I mean, all over the world, we should be able to choose the U.S. president, because it's not just for the U.S., but it's like the world president.
Yes.
So that's how I felt. And I never knew Dennis Kucinich, but when I first heard him was this January, a friend of mine sent me one of his speeches. And in his speech, he said the United States should work towards eliminating all the weapons of mass destruction. And as far as I remember, I don't think any president ever said that in the United States. And he was speaking for world peace. He was speaking about creating Department of Peace. Very innovative things. I was so thrilled. And I didn't know he was a candidate then. He was just one of the congressmen. And I am a writer, so in my weekly column, I wrote, imagine if this man was the president of the United States, what kind of world is possible? And my article had so much response from the readers. And 2 months later, I learned that he was running for the president of the United States. So I was very surprised and very happy, and I decided to see him. I live in Japan, but I flew to West Coast when he was giving tour in California State. I went there to meet him and see if he's real. a lot of times those politicians are very good at how to speak. You know, they're very good at speaking.
Yes.
They always say wonderful things and they do different things. So
right,
I
right.
have to make sure that before I support him, I have to make sure that he's real. He means what he says.
And how did you then decide that, do you feel that he is real beyond just rhetoric?
Uh-huh. Yeah, I went with him for his tour in California for 3 days. And I saw him, how he behaved with people, especially poor people or people with disabilities, you know, those people with less maybe income or less opportunity. He was very, very kind and sympathetic. And you could tell, you know,
yes.
if he's real or not by when a person is meeting those weaker people, say if he's arrogant or he's really, you know, kind and sympathetic and his heart is there with, you know, you could tell. And I was really watching hard how he behaved with people.
That's wonderful. And, yes. And your work in Japan has also been working around a book called Addicted to War by Joel Andreas, and you have been very active in this campaign in Japan. How are people receiving this campaign of radical peace work and environmental justice work?
I never thought it was radical, but I like the United States. I have so many good friends, and all my friends are either environmentalists or peace activists who woke me up. I used to work for American Bank. I was a banker and trader. So I have lots of friends anyway. So I don't consider myself anti-American. I love America death. I want America to be better, you know, because it's really destroying the planet. It's destroying hope of the people around the world. Not just killing people outside, but also taking your hope, you know, to live better or to live. So it's time United States Americans realize that and work towards more sustainable world or more peaceful world, which we can do.
And are the people in Japan responding to your work to internationalize this campaign?
Yes. This campaign was born right after the September 11th attack. It's called the Global Peace Campaign.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember at that time the American people were so shocked. And the opinion poll was supporting President Bush to attack Afghanistan. It was like 90%. It was very shocking because I could not imagine any of my friends in the United States would support war, you know. I called and I wrote letters to them asking questions. Are you really feeling that way? Is that really true? Everybody's supporting Bush? And the answer was no, it wasn't. But there was even a very strong anti-war movement, but people cannot express themselves because it was so people so sensitive about it and very angry. And of course, they should be before that attack, but there should be another way. It wasn't a war; it was an incident, an attack, and there should be different way of treating that. You know, instead of bombing innocent people, you know, it won't solve anything.
Yes.
And they're still doing that. Anyway, Global Peace Campaign was formed right after September 11th to, in search of different solutions to eliminate maybe terrorism and also violence. And Japanese people have been supporting this campaign by spending money when I was trying to put place advertisement in New York Times or Washington Post. Well, LA Times about this war, or against this war.
Okay, and quickly to return to Susan. Susan, do you feel that, can you express to people your sense of if we did possibly bring about this movement to have Kucinich be the candidate, and if a man or person like Kucinich were to be president, what would happen to the executive structure of the U.S. government. Can you describe what would we gain by you know, having that kind of person as president?
May I just please say first to Yumi, I am so honored to meet you.
Oh, hi. Thank you. Thank you. We are in this together.
We are. Thank you so much, and I can't wait to meet you in person.
Yes, me too. I am Dennis coming to the United States, by the way.
Thank you. Yes, and I hear about your book, and I wanted to give you the good news that Dennis's book, A Prayer for America, is now a New York Times bestseller. People can get it on the website. Yeah.
Great.
Yes. So, sorry, David, to get back to your question.
Yes, no, this is fun.
I just couldn't resist. I'm so excited to meet her. Anyway, obviously, when a president appoints a whole structure of people throughout the U.S. federal government and has the opportunity to appoint then people who are honest, have integrity, and people who are people of courage and not fear.
Mm.
People who are not just going to bow down and say, I will do whatever the power structure tells me. And this is where there's so much opportunity. Congressman Kucinich is connected with so many wonderful people. There are so many incredible endorsers. For example, just yesterday, Wendell Berry, the environmentalist farmer poet, writer, endorsed. Also David Bloom, also known as Farmer Dave, who supports alcohol fuel, which could transform our fuels from fossils to clean burning fuels and give us fresher air to breathe so quickly. These are the kind of people that, for example, as president, President Kucinich could appoint. Imagine it. The possibilities are astounding. We can do so much more than we ever have been able to.
Yes, and can you, I'm sorry we have to wrap up this conversation because we're trying to squeeze in some of the other work, the global campaign work that is happening, but Susan, can you describe how people can connect with either your work itself or the efforts to get behind the Kucinich campaign?
Well, for the Kucinich campaign, first of all, there are several events coming up this Friday evening with Dennis, and I urge everyone to meet him directly if you can. A dinner and an event afterwards. The New York headquarters number is 212-791-1660. 791-1660. There's also a fundraising lunch with Dennis on December 2nd. If they can't see Dennis, I'll come to their communities and I'll bring videotapes of him because you really need to see him in person. Also, try going to the website, kucinich.us. That's KUCINICH.US. And there are videos there that you can watch. As Yumi said, it's so important to see whether this person is for real. I had to see whether he was for real myself, too, I admit.
So these are New York events coming up soon?
Yes.
Are the dates again?
This Friday night, the 21st, and then December 2nd.
That's 212-791-1660, is that correct?
That's right. And people can also call the national number, 866-413-3664.
866-413-3664. Very good. I feel so terrible having to hang up, but Yumi, can you say a connection, how we can connect with your work, and a quick goodbye from Japan?
The Global Peace Campaign's website is www.peace2001, which is peace, P-E-A-C-E, 2001.org.
Okay.
And it's some English site. It's mostly in Japan, but there is some English.
Yes, you can click on the English.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, Yumi, thank you so much. I wish we had more time. It's been wonderful connecting hands across the Pacific. And we'll be looking forward to maybe connecting with you again and keep up the good
work. Call me in again, okay? I will be up.
Okay, thank you for staying up with us.
Thanks.
Okay, bye. And Susan, quick goodbye.
Thank you, David. It's great to be on your show again.
Okay, thank you, and we'll be in touch.
Great.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you. WBAI present a benefit exhibit featuring stone sculpture from Zimbabwe. From Sunday, November 16th to Friday, the 21st, there will be over 200 exquisite pieces of Shona art in many artistic styles and stone types. We urge you to come, enjoy the exhibit, make a tax-deductible contribution, and take home a piece of this life-affirming art. The event will take place at Lincoln's Amsterdam House on the second floor gallery, 110 West End Ave at 65th Street. That's Sunday, November 16th, 1 to 6 p.m., and Monday through Friday, November 21st, from 6 to 9 p.m. For more information, call 212-362-6021. That's 212-362-6021.
This is Joy Williams, election supervisor for WBAI. After a long struggle, the Pacifica Foundation has new bylaws, which require democratically elected boards at all their stations, and that includes WBAI. The nomination period has already begun. Now we need talented, hardworking listener sponsors from every background and community to work on WBAI's new station board. There are 18 seats to fill, so we need lots of candidates. If you'd like to run, or you know someone else who would, act now. Visit our website at www.wbai.org or call 212-209-2976 for more information about the upcoming election. Again, that's www.wbai.org or call 212-209-2976.
Welcome back to WBAI in New York. You're listening to Ecologic, Our Common Fate. This is David Okuto. We will be speaking to Lorraine Morey, an independent scientist and international expert on the health and environmental effects of uranium weaponry, and also Gar Smith, editor of The Edge, cutting-edge environmental news and analysis, environmental news from the brink. Lorraine, are you with us? Okay, we're bringing in our phone calls. Lorraine, are you with us? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, and Gar, are you there?
I'm here. Greetings, David.
Okay, let me make a quick announcement while we have you there. We know you're with us, so I can just make this quick public service announcement. We do have people in the back at 212-209-2950. We need your support. We are at a point at WBAI where it is essential that we survive, and we do have folks in the back to take your calls of support at 212-209-2950. And also another public service announcement, there will be a candidates forum Thursday, November 20th, 2003, a candidates forum, an open forum for listeners and candidates for the WBAI local station board to meet and greet each other. All are welcome. WBAI election supervisor Joy Williams will be in attendance. This is Thursday, November 20th at 7 p.m. at the Latino Center, 191 East 3rd Street in Manhattan between Avenues A and B. That's 191 East 3rd Street between Avenues A and B. The number 6 train to Bleecker Street, or the F or V train to the Lower East Side, 2nd Avenue Station. You can call 212-209-2976 for further information, or always call 209-2800 for the main desk, and we will have try to have that information available for you. Okay, Lorraine, we are going to discuss the World Depleted Uranium and Uranium Weapons Conference, which was held October 16th through 19th, 2003, at the University of Hamburg. The evidence coming from the scientists, health professionals, and legal experts at this conference is clear. Uranium weaponry is causing significant health effects worldwide, and it is already illegal under existing international law and convention. It is up to the people to force rogue governments like the United States and Britain to observe international law. So, Lorraine, could you bring about some of your work to the audience?
Yes. I worked in two nuclear weapons laboratories. I'm actually a geologist or a geoscientist, and I worked at the Lawrence Berkeley Lab for 5 years and then later at the Lawrence Livermore Lab for 2 years, and I was studying volcanoes and cleaning up chemical pollution, but I really did not know anything about radiation until I went to Hiroshima and Nagasaki 3 years ago, when I was invited by Japanese citizens to come and talk about Yucca Mountain, which is the most important public project the United States has ever done. And I learned the truth about radiation and nuclear weapons in those two peace museums in Japan. So I came back, and I was just very angry and felt betrayed, and I knew our government had lied to us about the health effects of radiation. So I began learning everything that I could about the effects of fallout from nuclear testing in the United States, which actually contaminated or exposed every person living in the U.S. between 1958 and 1963. And also about the health effects of nuclear power plants. And there's a group of scientists doing studies on baby teeth, which they've collected around nuclear power plants and measured the radiation in them and then looked at disease around the power plants. And so those two backgrounds on radiation sort of drew me into the depleted uranium issue.
Okay, and the recent conference addressed this issue of spreading this material throughout Iraq in this last invasion and current occupation. We will be discussing that very as in depth as we can go in the minutes we have. But Gar, can you quickly tell us quickly your approach to, or your meeting of the minds with this work, and how you were brought into the work around radiation?
I'm actually wearing a different hat than my editorial hat at The Edge, which is an investigative environmental magazine. I'm today on as co-founder of Environmentalists Against War, which is an outgrowth of a statement that came together actually in December of 1990, just before the outbreak of the first Persian Gulf War, when a group of environmental organizations issued an international environmental call to action, pleading with the international community to recognize that wars cause sometimes nearly irremediable environmental damage. We have come together again a decade later under a different President Bush, facing a different but very similar war in the Gulf, in which the damage is very extreme on the terrain of the region, and also the social structures and the human population of the region. And now, 10 years later, we have new weapons that are even more destructive, and the one of the worst among them is the depleted uranium. We just got a letter from a father who is whose daughter is going over to the Gulf, and he is very concerned about the people over there who are presumably breathing the remnant dust that's left behind from the use of thousands of tons of depleted uranium weapons in just this latest invasion. A lot of depleted uranium was used in the first attack 12 years ago, and this material, as Lauren and others well know, is very long-lasting, and when it's breathed into the lungs, it can be very, very damaging.
And Lauren, this recent conference in Hamburg, one of the, I guess one of the great outcomes was how it codified almost, it said, look, this is different than any of the studies that have been done on mined uranium, the byproducts, the reactive byproducts of using this as munitions creates aerosols and alloys that have synergistic radiotoxic, chemotoxic effects that all the studies that they say, oh no, this is not as severe a danger as you are saying, have to be thrown out, and this has to be looked at as a new form of contamination. And did this conference actually say, look, this is the substance we're dealing with, and we have to stop playing around with the rhetoric on low-level radiation? Would that be correct?
That's right. And this was a very, very interesting conference. There were 200 people from 20 countries and 5 continents. We had between 25 and 30 Japanese, including scientists, who came, and human shield people. I think the most important testimony was by 2 medical doctors from southern Iraq with photographs, epidemiological data on and studies on the long-term effects that they have seen in unborn babies and children and adults who have been exposed since DU was introduced for the first time by the United States on the battlefield in 1991. And fortunately, we had an excellent woman scientist from Iraq who had done a complete and published contamination study of the environment in southern Iraq. So we have the epidemiological data and the environmental data to demonstrate and to provide the evidence and the information and also the human aspect on this, the use of depleted uranium. And I'd just like to make a comment. The U.S. government, the Pentagon, the Department of Energy have deceptively used the inhalation studies on dogs, which were done at the University of Rochester, and the Navajo uranium miners studies to compare to the effects of depleted uranium. And these are two completely different materials, and they're different chemically, they're different physically. They are not the same, so you can't use apples to describe oranges.
Yes, and an interesting note I saw was that the conference said that we should replace the term ban these weapons to abolition. Can you describe the difference between banning these weapons and the abolition of these weapons?
Yes. Using the term ban, and this has been introduced, it was introduced at a conference in Belgium a week before our conference, to deliberately confuse the issue. When you use ban, you are implying that depleted uranium is not already illegal. When you ask for abolition or moratorium, that is implying that it is illegal. And depleted uranium is illegal. It has been illegal since the blueprint for depleted uranium was written during the Manhattan Project in 1943. And at that time, they didn't know if the nuclear weapons would be successful, so they said, let's take the radioactive trash from that project, what's left over that we can't use, and make battlefield weapons, bombs, bullets, or larger shells, and because that will be an excellent weapon, and they exactly described that it would go through all protective clothing, it goes through all gas masks and air filters. It's impossible to even devise protective gear against depleted uranium exposure. And they said it would contaminate the environment, as GAR is so concerned about, the soil, the air, the water, and even the blood. And they described it as a radioactive gas. It behaves like a radioactive gas.
Right. Now, GAR, the conference called for remediation efforts, decontamination efforts. What do you know about the possibilities for decontamination in these severely impacted areas?
some attempts have been going underway in areas where the U.S. and NATO forces have used depleted uranium weapons in Kosovo and Afghanistan. One of the problems is that the U.S. has been less than forthcoming about the targeted areas where these weapons were used. Some of the investigators on the ground have been able to locate the contaminated areas. One problem appears to be that the depleted uranium begins to break down in the soil after a certain number of months and becomes more difficult to isolate and extract. It's a very difficult material to work with. It's another one of these terrible legacies that war creates, along with unexploded ordnance on the ground and landmines. It's something that is easy to use over vast stretches of land, very difficult to remove once it's in there.
Can we say, though, that when the political will and the monies that now are being spent to continually destroy and create mayhem in the global social network, if monies were redirected, political will was intense, decontamination is not impossible. Would that be correct?
Decontamination is not impossible. It's rigorous, it's difficult, it's problematic, it's dangerous, but it's not impossible.
Okay. Loren, would you have anything to add to that quickly on that note?
Yeah. The most important thing is to go in and pick up the radioactive bullets and the pieces of radioactive material that are lying on the ground. And from a study that UNEP, the United Nations Environmental Program, did last spring, or they released the results, 25% of the depleted uranium bullets that were in the ground from, I believe, 1998 have dissolved, and they have now contaminated the groundwater. So it's terribly important to pick up the bullets that are lying around on the surface, because they break down and they continue to contribute to air pollution, which ends up in the soil and the water and people's lungs.
Yes, and to move to another topic quickly, because we are very short on time, the Gar, your website included a photograph, I noticed, of protesters in Baghdad, a nonviolent human blockade of tanks. Is this, we have not seen this kind of nonviolent protesting in Iraq. Can you describe this photograph to us?
Yeah, it was a rather extraordinary photograph. I think it deserves to be as well distributed as the classic moment of the single protester in the streets of Beijing standing up against a convoy of tanks. It's one of a number of images that people in the United States tend not to see, but the rest of the world is all too familiar with. And if people wish to see images like this, they just have to go to the foreign press.
Yes.
Or they can go to my website.
Right. But in other words, this indicates a level of human action in Iraq that we are so out of touch with in this country, which brings us to your recent work called editorials entitled America's Ministry of Propaganda. Can you quickly mention some of that work?
That was a document, an extraordinary document, the Gardner Report, that was brought to my attention by John Stauber, the co-editor of Weapons of Mass Deception. Joseph Welch, the former ambassador who wrote an essay criticizing the Bush administration's use of fraudulent documents to promote the idea that Iraq was trying to buy uranium from Niger, resulted in Mr. Welch responding by spreading around a document prepared by a colonel, retired colonel in the U.S. Air Force, Colonel Sam Gardner. 56-page report, which I boiled down into 8,000 words on my website. And basically, Mr. Gardner identified 50 so-called stories of strategic influence, essentially propaganda, that had been created intentionally by operatives in an office in the White House that is designed to spread information to market the war, the invasion. And we're familiar with a lot of the stories, the aluminum tubes, the Jessica Lynch rescue, the uranium that didn't exist, the weapons of mass destruction that were non-existent. Turns out these were all coordinated by a single office in the White House. And it's an extraordinary report. It's available in PDF files. If people don't have PDF, that's why I produced an 8,000-word text précis of it.
Yes, it's called Perception Management, the Merging of Politics, Militarism, and Perception Management. I would love to speak further in depth, but I want to get to Loren. Loren, the issue of the International Criminal Tribunal for Iraq, the planning session in Istanbul that occurred, and these criminal tribunals that are ongoing in building the human evidence, the actual people's voice. Can you quickly describe that?
Yes. I'm involved with the International Criminal Tribunal for Afghanistan, which has been going on in Japan for the last year. And we actually went to Istanbul at the end of October to plan an international criminal tribunal for Iraq. This is to oppose the fact that victors write history. This will be citizens investigating Afghanistan and, in the next year and a half, Iraq, holding public hearings in countries around the world and tribunals. The final tribunal will be in Istanbul in March of 2005, on the day that the bombing began in Iraq.
Can you describe how people can get more connected to this work, this global work?
Yes. We already have Mexico, Belgium, UK, many countries, Turkey, involved in organizing events, and we will be doing outreach and so forth, but people can do a web search on International Criminal Tribunal for Iraq, and I think they have a website now. If that's not finished, it will be soon.
Okay, and Gar, can you mention to people how they can get in touch with your work?
We have a website, Environmentalists Against War. We've already started posting some of the information from the World Depleted Uranium Conference. We have just scads of information, government reports, think tank reports, NGO reports on the impacts of war in the U.S. and around the world. The website is the 3Ws dot EnviroAgainstWar.org.
And also you can go to earthisland.org/the-edge. Thank you. I'm sorry to have to cut everyone off. We have to move on. You've been listening to Ecologic with David Occhiuto. Please stay tuned to WBAI, and please give your heartfelt support. Thank you.
And thank you, David. And as you mentioned before, folks, you can call 212-209-2950 to support WBAI. A few announcements. This evening, Norma Finkelstein will be speaking at Queens College on Israel and Palestine, Roots of Conflict, Prospect for Peace. And I think it's going to be in the Rosenthal Room at 120. But if you check with Queens College, you can find that out. And Ready for the Revolution, The Life and Struggle of Stokely Carmichael, also known as Kwame Ture. The Schomburg Center in Research in Black Culture will be having a program this evening discussing his biography written by Michael Thelwell, along with John Edgar Wedman and Sonia Sanchez at the Schomburg Center at 135th Street and Malcolm X Boulevard in Harlem. So please, folks, stay tuned to WBAI and support the programming we do. Coming up next, Natural Living with Gary Null, followed by The Positive Mind with Armand DeMille. But before that, the Community Bulletin Board.
Following is a list of events from the WBAI Community Bulletin Board.
The Unitarian Church of All Souls in New York City will celebrate its third annual Thanksgiving Blessing of the Animals service on Sunday, November 23rd, from 3 to 4:30 p.m. in the church sanctuary. Congregants are invited to bring their companion animals to be blessed. The service is open to animal lovers of all faiths and ages and their companion animals. The Unitarian Church of All Souls is located at 1157 Lexington Avenue at 80th Street in Manhattan. For more information, call 212-535-5530. That's 212-535-5530.
You're invited to a free movie premiere for Children of Heaven, an Iranian film about family. Following the screening, there will be a discussion about the film and everyday life in Iran as seen through the eyes of Iranian Americans. This event is sponsored by Montclair, New Jersey Peace Action. It's taking place on Thursday, November 20th at 7:30 p.m. at the Bloomfield College Westminster Arts Center, Van Fossen Theater, located at 457 Franklin Street in Bloomfield, New Jersey. For more information or directions, call 973-744-3263. That's 973-744-3263.
Music on Myrtle is holding part two of its money-making series. Black Powernomics, Controlling Our Own Industries, will be discussed on Tuesday, November 25th at 5:30 p.m. Intellectual property rights will be the subject on Wednesday, November 26th at 6 p.m. The Money Making Series is free and open to the public, and it's happening at 405 Myrtle Avenue between Vanderbilt and Clinton Avenues in Brooklyn. For more information, call 718-596-6667. That's 718-596-6667. Or email musiconmyrtle@yahoo.com.
A program on the beginnings of the civil rights movement, retracing the 381 days of the Montgomery bus boycott sparked by Rosa Parks' courageous refusal to give up her bus seat to a white man, will be held at the East Meadow Public Library on Thursday, November 20th at 7:15 p.m. Documentary films and a community of elders will shed light on this momentous event in American history. Admission is free.